So just helping you get to know Joe. I'm excited to share Joe with everyone. But Joe, I thought we'd start off just talking a little bit about your background and how did you end up coming to IDEO?
I don't know.
Most of us feel that way.
Right? I've got a pretty weird background, I guess, but that's probably normal for IDEO. So when I was a kid, I was really interested in science and always wanted to be a scientist. So I studied biology in my undergrad and worked as a cancer biologist after school for 4 or 5 years, doing a bunch of different stuff, but kind of gravitated towards, we had some technology platforms to take pictures of cells and count things. And I got more and more interested in that side of it. I did that for a while and then realized I wanted to be a tech entrepreneur. So I went to business school, mostly because I was too lazy to get a PhD in science. So I went to business school and learned a lot there, tried a lot of different things. And that's actually where I met IDEO. So Tim Brown, our CEO, gave a talk my first year at business school. And I was like, what is this? Because I had never heard of IDEO and honestly had never really thought about design. And it just like felt like it sounded like this magical place that was perfect for me. And so I started to read the books and kind of get involved and got really lucky. Tim came back to school the next year and he was friends with a professor and co-sponsored a project in this class. And I got onto that project team and the rest is history. I got to meet a bunch of people. I drank the Kool-Aid and actually didn't get into IDEO right after school. I was talking to people and made some friends. And I went and worked as a product manager online at Fidelity and did that for about a year and a half and then joined IDEO New York in the early days.
Cool. So we take cancer biology, business school, Fidelity, so financial services and product management and technology. And then you roll that all up and come and join our New York office right when it was starting.
Yeah.
And I remember when you joined and there were some really cool experiments coming out of the New York office around this mix of like scientific level experimentation and business models. And so I'd love for you to talk about just some of the things that you did when you were thinking through, like, how do we test and prototype with a business?
Yeah. So I remember when I first joined, one piece of context is back in those days, not only was New York new, but the business design discipline was still pretty new. There was probably, I don't know exactly how many of us there were globally, but 10-ish, let's say.
How would you explain business design? Like, what is that kind of in a nutshell?
Business design is applying kind of the design approach and philosophy to business problems. So we would not just think about, at that time, people would say like, okay, we have this cool idea. How much money is it going to make? And that's not that, like, sure, that's part of what a business designer can do. But really, a business designer can think about how to use a creative approach to thinking about competition, strategy, the product itself, and kind of the best business design is integrated with the other disciplines. Yeah. So whether that's design research or graphic design, interaction design, engineering, all of it. I think it's just another complement and another lens that IDEO brings to problem solving. So at that time, it was pretty new. And it, funnily, I had kind of run away from my science background. I went to business school and I was like, all right, I don't want to do lab stuff anymore. And when I got to IDEO, everybody's talking about prototyping all the time and kind of running experiments. And I think we do that really well in a lot of ways with paper prototypes, acting things out, and all of the kind of like things that we do to understand experiences. And business design was pretty new. And so I was getting really curious about the question, like, how would you prototype something that's complicated and abstract, like a business? And it's actually got, you know, multiple pieces to it. So that was a question that I was interested in, and many others at that point were pretty interested in. And so I started to, like, in the spirit of IDEO, trying things. Mm-hmm. And
I remember one of the early ones was something with, it happened to be with online learning.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about those, like one of those first rapid experiments that you ran?
Yeah, we were working with an online university and we're trying to help them think through their business model and redesign it for them. So that was one of the first times we'd gotten a challenge like that at IDEO, where the challenge wasn't help us come up with a new product or help us make a better experience, but it was actually like redesign our business model. And so we tried a bunch of things and we had kind of four concept directions we wanted to try. And so one of the things we wanted to test was like, okay, how attractive are these four directions to actual learners? And so we wanted to test the value proposition. So we created four fake university websites. We made up a fake university name. And then we had kind of taglines and imagery associated with each of them. And then, and this was in 2010, I think. Mm-hmm. And this idea, I think it was, what's his name? 4-hour work week guy. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Anyways, he had talked about using Google Ads as a way to test value propositions for his book for the 4-hour work week. And so we were inspired by that. We said, well, why don't we do that for the university itself? And so we bought Google Ads using the different kind of value propositions for the fake universities. And we wanted to see which of these resonated more, as not a conclusive, like whoever clicks on university number one is that one wins. But it was just another kind of data point that we pulled in along with all the other kind of traditional design research that we did.
And so you would put these ads out there and then see if people clicked on them, went through to the website, and did they bounce immediately from that website, or did they try to click and find more information? Were they drawn in?
So the first time we did it, we were looking to see which ads got clicked on, and then we had a place for people to put their email addresses. Now this is like standard, right? Yeah. Like there's like websites that actually help you create these kind of like launch pages and see if you can collect email addresses. And collecting an email address was kind of a early kind of lead indicator for how interested people were. Yep. And over time we started to realize like, oh, that's great, but we have assumptions about how this business works. We can actually build, without building out the whole product or offer, we can start to test more assumptions once they've gotten onto the site.
Yeah. And that's really the essence, I feel like, of what you're bringing to so much of our work is what are those early assumptions that you need to tackle?
Right.
Right at the beginning before you get into everything else. That's also one of the hardest pieces of the entire business design puzzle is like, what's the crux of this issue? And if this unfolds, then the others are to be tackled later.
That's the art and the science is asking, like everything else in design, like asking the right question. Mm-hmm. And what we often do and did then was we would build business models in spreadsheets to try to understand the dynamics of how the business works. And then we would ask kind of what has to be true and for this business to work. And then we would prioritize, okay, if assumption number one doesn't work, then assumptions 2, 3, 4, 5 don't matter. So let's design a cool experiment to test assumption number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that seems so simple, but that question of what has to be true and in what order do these assumptions unfold is
crazy
is key. Yeah. I mean, let's talk about, I know there's one that we've written a lot about and there's a lot of information out there. So, and it's also just a really cool business model that we worked on, which is PillPack.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about then? So we started off with these, you know, ads, Google ads and fake web pages, but then what are some of the larger degrees that we go to prototype a business model?
Sure. So PillPack is a startup online pharmacy that puts all of your medications on a day-to-day basis into really nice, well-designed daily packs. And they were one of our first startups in residence out of our Boston, now Cambridge studio. And they came in pretty early in their life and we helped them design their branding, their website, and all of these other things. But one of the things we wanted to test was their pricing and their value proposition and trying to understand, like, this was kind of a new concept at the time and we wanted to see how customers and actual people responded to their offer. So the team in Boston got a kiosk in a mall. And
I think we have a picture we're going to put up here because this one's just so cool. Yeah.
And so they branded it and the CEO, who's a pharmacist, stood behind the kiosk and I think they did it for a few days, and they tried different pricing. They tried different ways into the conversation. And what they were really learning in a quick way was kind of the same concept as testing things on a website, but actually direct with people. Yeah. And then what's cool about that is you can ask follow-up questions, right? Mm-hmm. So when you collect data from a website, you can see if people are behaving the way you expect, right? What are they clicking on? Do they find the thing that they're looking for? But when you're actually putting yourself out there, we call this a lemonade stand prototype, where you're kind of selling the lemonade, in this case, selling PillPack. And so you can kind of like role play different value propositions, different pricing, and actually get real-time feedback from people about your business. You're kind of turning your big complicated business into this little lemonade stand. It's just you and the customer and a brand and a proposition.
Yeah.
And so that's a great example of a business prototype. And we've done that not just for online pharmacies, but we've done it with food, mm-hmm. startups, or big companies, I'm sorry. And lots of other ways. It's a great way to prototype a business.
Yeah, I think some of the ones that get the most fun are when I've seen us do kind of a lemonade stand type of prototype with food products.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we can actually even taste the foods, but a lot of times it's just kind of the interactions and the conversation around them. Still, you get like some hard data with, do people come, are they interested? And then the richness of that follow-on conversation. I know one of the stories I love about PillPack is that then part of this testing of the value went online, and this time to Facebook.
Right.
And so I don't know if you're familiar with like some of the conversations that followed on there, you know, that people were saying, some people were coming up saying like, this packaging seems so wasteful. Mm-hmm. And then others would step forward and say, yes, but if my daughter doesn't get her medication and exactly the right thing, she's going to have severe medical problems. So this is a place where
right. The
waste of packaging might trump. And I was like, oh my God, learning all of that through your Facebook page is
it's a pretty, great platform for learning. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are some of your, are there some things that you're seeing in the business design community at IDEO that you're impressed with or inspired by in some of our experiments now?
Yeah. The business design community has just taken it to a whole new level. Yeah. And I feel like I'm the old guy who's like, in my day. but yeah, so we just actually helped one of our clients launch a business, I think last week or 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Not me, but some of the business designers, Carl Fudge led that project.
Oh yeah.
And that's to me is like the holy grail. Like we've wanted to do what we call venture design, and we've done it in pieces, and we've kind of helped push things out there over the years. But here's this kind of complete, holistic offer of not just redesigning the business model the way that we did with that online university, but actually putting it into action. And so I think that requires constant prototyping.
Yeah.
On a like week to week basis, you're kind of designing how you think the business is going to work. And that can be, again, the financial model, that can be the operational model, that could be the brand, that could be the products and services, and constantly testing all those pieces. Yeah. And not just those pieces in isolation, but actually the tricky and exciting thing about a business, prototyping a business, is all those pieces have to actually be working in harmony. Mm-hmm. And so actually sometimes what you're testing is not pricing, but it's actually the combination of pricing and brand, or like how those things overlap.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's one that we can share out more information later, but I think what's so fascinating in this trajectory over time is that IDEO's always been known for the rough and rapid mm-hmm. and ready prototypes, but then how do you then prototype through the viability propositions and feasibility, and then launch and learn.
Yeah.
Take it all the way out to the marketplace and just continue to test as you're live with a minimum viable product, and then refining that over time as we get to market. Yeah.
And that's where I think we've evolved in a good way, which is when you think about running experiments and prototypes, it's great to talk to people and hear what they say they would do, but it's even better to put the thing in their context and see what they actually do with it.
Yep.
And so launching and learning is kind of the best way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and now I want to talk about
yeah.
something that I know is absolutely front and center for you now. So you moved through working with a lot of our businesses and then had this really amazing idea for how to help more organizations at scale and with something called the CoLab. So I'd love it if you just share a little bit about CoLab and how prototyping at all levels plays into what you're doing there.
Sure. So a couple, as I said before, like really been always been interested in new technology, and recently we've been seeing kind of across all of the businesses that we work with that new technology is kind of changing faster and faster. The rate of change is increasing and it's hard to keep up. It's hard to figure out what does this mean for my business? And so I was really inspired to think about if IDEO generally starts with people, like what would it be like if we started with technology, mm-hmm. And tried to understand those new technologies like blockchain, like artificial intelligence and IoT and all these things that we hear a lot about. And not technology for technology's sake, but actually as designers, like looking at these technologies as tools, new tools for our toolbox to solve people's problems. And so starting by really understanding these tools, and then the way that we understand them is by building stuff and applying them. And so that's a big part of what the CoLab is. The second part is thinking about a lot of the problems that we're faced with today require collaboration, mm-hmm. and require a network. And so rather than everybody taking risk and exploring things on their own, what if we built a group and a place for big companies, startups, universities, and IDEO to explore things together and combine our resources, our knowledge, our capabilities to move faster and to learn quickly.
And so you take super cutting edge technologies that we have lots of open questions about how they're going to work and solve problems, but they have potential, massive potential. And then this collaborative network across public, private, education sector, and how do you bring them together to work on things?
So prototyping is our shared medium and language. We surface kind of shared questions. So an example of that at a really high level is like a couple of years ago, our first summer lab was about blockchain, and we were interested at that time, everybody was talking about Bitcoin. And we were interested, like, well, if blockchain is enabling this revolutionary thing called Bitcoin, then what else could it enable? So what is blockchain good for aside from Bitcoin? And lots of people had that question. And our way of answering that question, the first thing is to establish what is the shared question we all have. And then the second thing is to break it up into themes and then build a bunch of prototypes. Because rather, like, most people at that point, especially for early stage things, are analyzing and projecting into the future. And rather than do that, we again, like if these are new tools that we want to put them in our hands and we want to try to use them and say, like, okay, this tool is really good for hammering nails, but it stinks for cutting things. Overly simplifying. But so we build prototypes really quickly. We tend to work in kind of quick cycles, 3 days or for a first prototype, and then 5 weeks for something that's working.
Yeah.
And we just cycle through a lot of those.
And so with blockchain, can you share a couple of the just to help people understand, like, what were a couple of the diverse organizations coming together, and then what's the kind of thing that might come out of that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So we work with City Ventures, Fidelity Labs, NASDAQ, Liberty Mutual. More recently, we've added Blue Cross Blue Shield, and then three of the largest utility companies in the U.S., Exelon, Duke, and Southern. And one of the surprising things we've learned is, like, there's a lot of overlap even across these industries. In fact, some of the most industry interesting opportunities we've surfaced are at the intersections of these areas. So, for example, energy companies are usually the last thing that the unbanked can... energy companies have a lot of information about the unbanked and their credit patterns that banks don't have, because the last thing you do is turn off your electric bill. And so there's a way to actually help provide new services to the unbanked because you have this information about them. Wow. And so these are things that, you know, none of us would have surfaced otherwise. But back to your question about what sorts of things do we explore with blockchain? We're interested in kind of like this idea of trust, transactions, and reputation. And so we built a bunch of prototypes, everything from a way to certify your education. So something that might be relevant for IDOU, mm-hmm. where you can create a token and put it on the blockchain and it's there forever to say that I actually took this IDOU mm-hmm. course and I'm certified. To
and it's a huge challenge because working across multiple educational institutions that people right. do more naturally today rather than just the one.
Right? Yeah. I mean, yeah. anyone can say that they've mm-hmm. taken these courses and put it on mm-hmm. LinkedIn and, yep. and maybe they have or maybe they haven't. And then a really cool one that we did that's kind of continued on is we built a smart solar panel. Uh-huh. So we learned about these things called renewable energy certificates. Uh-huh. And these are kind of when you have if you have a solar panel, you're producing green power, you can self-report that I produced X number of megawatts of power. And then you kind of you put it out onto the web and somebody will buy that because they're trying to offset dirty power. And we said like, oh, well, if we could use the blockchain to give solar panels a unique identity that proves that they're a green energy source, and then connected to one of our members, NASDAQ's private markets, could we have the solar panel as it produces energy issuing the certificates autonomously? And so we spent about 5 weeks working with NASDAQ and a startup called Filament, which had some of the mesh networking technology, and made solar panels that did that on their own, which was pretty
cool. Wow. And then how did you get feedback on that? Once you had made this prototype, did you share it to people? And how did you figure out some of the answers on either the technological or the business side?
Yeah. So that one was mostly kind of a technological proof of concept. Mm-hmm. Because from the user side, we were trying to prove that our assumption was that normal homeowners don't care about renewable energy certificates. Yeah. Nor do they want to take the time to actually record their energy usage and then sell these certificates online. So we just wanted to make that totally invisible and in the background. And all they would care about is like, oh, I'm getting a little bit of extra mm-hmm. money, or I'm contributing to green power. So what we wanted to test was like, could we actually get a system that produced these things autonomously so that it would be invisible and in the background. Mm. And so that was kind of the main proof point. And then the second proof point was we wanted to take it to people who actually had solar fields and solar panels and see if this solved problems for them. So one of our members, NASDAQ, went out and did that and actually found a company that has solar fields that wants to pilot it. And that was kind of the big proof point. Yeah. And that's going forward.
It's so cool because I think one of the things that we're just kicking off a team on IDOU yesterday, and part of the conversation was, when you're dealing with so many layers of stakeholders, from your end users to your partners to the B2B relationships that you have and partnerships across this ecosystem, how do you tackle all of that? And so I feel like what you're talking about there is so interesting because it's like progressive. You can make something to make the conversations more tangible mm-hmm. and make it easier to be talking about something relatively similar than hand waving.
Right.
And then you can bring it out to a wide variety of stakeholders to push forward diverse parts of that problem and start to have the really important conversations, test assumptions, and move it forward.
Yeah. One of the things that I like to do is draw out the stakeholder map. So mm-hmm. what is the system that this prototype is going to live in?
Yeah.
And different stakeholders are impacted or touch it in different ways. And you want to understand what are they expecting? What can it do for them? What's the value? Like if there's three stakeholders, there's probably three different value propositions of the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so how do you understand that nuance and how do you test each value proposition in context is really important.
Cool. All right, so I'm going to take us on. I could talk about this all morning, but we're going to go on. We've had a couple of people, we invited people to submit a problem that they're working on. And so I just want to put up the submission form, which we'll share out. It's something that Joe and others in our business design community have been working on called the Venture Mad Libs. So if you didn't see it before, this is what we asked people to submit. So just a simple high-level statement about what their problem is that they're working on. And hopefully we'll make it through at least one, if not two of these this morning. So I'll go ahead and move on to that. So here's the first one. So this one is a really nice challenge. It's about somebody who's tackling a creative space for meetings. I thought we'd just walk through the process that Joe and others here use. So the name of this is Vision Loft, and they want to, at the highest level, change the way people meet. Great. Okay, what does that mean? They want to help innovators and visionaries, their target audience, to convene inspiring meetings utilizing technology and informal breakout spaces. So you can see the rest of this here online, but it's definitely, why are they going to choose this space? Because it's unlike any other option in the city. And then they've broken out their main assumption, is that people need these creative meeting spaces to do a different kind of visionary work. And so I thought, taking this challenge, we're going to just dive in, and we want to invite people to participate online as well. And Joe will kind of take us through, and then we can invite questions and participation in the chat as well.
Yeah. Well, so that's a cool challenge, and thanks for submitting it, whoever did that.
We got Julie on there. Yeah.
Thank you, Julie. So I think the one thing, so the Venture Mad Lib is one tool in our venture design toolkit, and its purpose is for really, really early stage ideas to start to dimensionalize, like, what is this business about? And so I think you talked about who the customer might be, that was like visionaries and innovators. Talked about the setting, so the new spaces, and talked about the solution, right? So like, there's implied a problem, and then the solution is more creative spaces enabled by technology. And one of the things that we constantly push people on and ourselves on is getting specific. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, as you think about this new space that enables the creative process, my first question is how, right? Is it just filled with whiteboards?
Yeah.
Is there inspiration everywhere?
What is the technology?
What's the technology component to it? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where we'd want to get really specific to understand, like, what's unique about this offer, mm-hmm. and how can we test to see if there's a business there.
And how do you break it out so that you make sure you get, like, good coverage of the kinds of questions? Because I know I tend to ask a certain kind of question because I'm always thinking about people and desirability. But how do you make sure a team or a small group working on a new venture is holistic?
Yeah, so you've seen the IDEO three circle diagram before. So you've got desirability, viability, and feasibility. This is basically, do people want it? Viability is, can we build a sustainable business model around it? And feasibility is, like, will the technology or will the operational side of this actually work, right? Like, is it possible?
Yeah.
And so I think those three circles are actually a great place, a simple place to start. Other people might use the business model canvas, which is just a more complex way to break up a business into its pieces and ask questions of it.
Yeah.
I think that works just as well. This is, I think, a simple way to start. So from a desirability perspective with this new creative space, once you define what's the unique value proposition of the space. So is it about getting to ideas faster, getting to results faster? Is the value proposition about being around other creative people that inspire you? Mm-hmm. Is it about
a need to get away from the regular things going on in your regular place of business?
Yeah, change of setting and mindset. Uh-huh. And so for on the desirability side, start to ask those sorts of questions, like, okay, like, do people want that? Do they want to get away? Yeah. Do they want to be around creative people? Do they want to be, you know, like, whatever the value proposition is. Mm-hmm. From the viability perspective, then you start to think about, okay, what has to be true for this business to work? So what are the costs associated with it? What's the pricing for this? And can we not lose money doing this? Mm-hmm. And so you can test both pricing, you can start to test channels. So, like, how are people going to find out about this? How much does it cost to market through those channels, etc.
Real estate prices. There are many of these that exist in the Bay Area, but real estate is always the trigger. In other cities, might be less so.
Yeah. So you might be more like a co-working space, or you might find, like, where is this space, and How are you going to pay for it?
Yeah.
And so you can get creative there too. Like you can think about like, oh, we're going to pair up with an art gallery and have like, you know, like have mm-hmm. that be part of the ambiance, or who knows, a classroom, or like there's lots of different variants yeah. there that you can play with. And then on the feasibility side, I think depending on what technologies you're assuming are going to be part of the solution, you mm-hmm. want to make sure that they actually work. And one that I think is interesting in this case is I'm imagining that there's some service component. It's not just get space mm-hmm. and the space is kind of empty and you're there to
yeah.
be creative, but there's probably an opportunity to facilitate the creative process somehow.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going to work? And can you test some assumptions around that?
So in this, then you take a long list of questions in yeah. each part. And I know we're putting up the model on the chat as well so that people can see it. Listing desirability questions, viability questions, feasibility questions, and then having conversations to figure out which one is the assumption that's going to need to unlock first, and what needs to be true
yep.
in order to make this so. So with this one, what's your, having just one page of a few blanks filled in on this,
sure.
What would you prototype to start working on this business?
I think I would try to hone in on what makes this unique. So why am I going to go to this place versus yeah. a Breather or a WeWork or a library or a coffee shop or, you know, an Airbnb even, right? Because there's mm-hmm. there's some pretty inspiring spaces there. And again, my intuition is there's probably some unique service element to why this space is uniquely suited for creative work. And whatever that was, let's say that just for the sake of argument, that it is, I'll bring a collab kind of idea to this. It's about collisions between different yeah. Creative folks. And so I would start to prototype, like, can we create collisions? And two, are they valuable? Are they mm-hmm. are they creating, not just from like a spending money perspective, but actually do the people who experience those collisions feel like that's making a change for them yeah. and helping them do whatever they're trying to do?
So you could just hold a series of events without even the space, if that's the crux of it.
Right, yeah. So you can, at the earliest stages mm-hmm. in your going there is like, I think you separate out all the pieces because it becomes overwhelming to sometimes to run a full on pilot, and it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So the trick is, how do you learn as quickly and cheaply as possible?
Yes.
And so, yeah, you could find an event space where you're just like renting it by the hour or for a day or whatever, and you're testing the interactions and the collisions part. You could try renting different spaces and bringing people in and seeing like, okay, how does the space component play here? You could try rotating different types of teams and people through yeah. and seeing what sticks.
Great.
And so the key is to try to prioritize your assumptions. You were talking about, you know, we collect a bunch of questions and when we ask what has to be true, and then we should try to say which questions are dependent on an answer from the other questions. So
mm-hmm.
like if question number two doesn't matter, if we can't answer question number one, then don't even waste time on question yeah. two. Just focus on question number one.
And I know one of the things that I've seen lots of people do, and I use this myself, is that I never know off the top of my head which question is it.
Yeah.
And it's the conversations with other stakeholders again that yeah. help me triangulate and get toward, well, when I have this conversation, I start to think this one's the center, and talking to another engineer, it's also coming up as that. So it's a handful of conversations to get you. I know I can see some questions about what is that right place to start? What is that right prototype? So that helps me.
Yeah.
I know we only have about 10 minutes left, and so we do have one more challenge, but I think I'm going to maybe throw in a couple questions coming from
sure.
our community. And then if we can get to that second concept, which is about solar power in Colombia, we'll try to get to that. But a couple things we're seeing here from Casper. This is, I think, touching on some of the things you've talked about with CoLab. So what are some of the best ways that corporate organizations can work with startups, in your opinion, with all the accelerators and incubators and things out there? What are some ways that you've seen this really flow?
Yeah, I think, you know, not just for corporates and startups, but this is true between corporates as well and across multiple parties, is our philosophy, and it's biased, is to build together. So we found that the act of prototyping is not just a way to learn about whatever, you know, the prototype or the content area is. It's actually a way to learn about how to work together. So it's, you know, the IDEO process is designed to be multidisciplinary. That kind of diversity doesn't just have to be a business person working with a technology and design person, but it can actually be different people from different organizations and different mindsets. So I think finding shared questions and building something. And to get specific about big companies and startups, is like, we should be very realistic. Like, they work very in very different ways. They speak different languages. They care about different things. And it can be quite frustrating to try to marry those mindsets. So again, like finding a shared question, and there's always something, right? Especially if you're trying, if you're a big company and you think a startup has some technology that you're interested in using, there's got to be a shared question that you can quickly build something and learn.
Yeah. And we've even done things like prototyping the relationship. Start with something that's small.
Yeah.
Totally. Where it's maybe a week together or a day to get to know each other, and then progressively going out to larger and larger chunks of time.
Yeah. And I would say that I would put it on the bigger companies to their reflex is to go big all the time, because that's what they're really good at, is scaling, scaling things. And so be okay spending a day building something or 3 days, but you'd be amazed at how much you can get done in that short period of time.
Well, and that's one of the questions I see here that I just think is good to talk about. So Diego is asking, for the prototyping process, what would be the average time for prototyping a business? And I know that's a tricky one. So like, what are ranges? There's nothing that's just like, it's always 2 weeks, but like, what are ranges that you've seen, and how have you pushed yourself to make it really short and tight?
Yeah. So we work in typically, and there is no right answer to this question, but we typically work in 3-day sprints and 5-week sprints. And that's to get to specific kinds of answers, right? The 3-day sprints is to express the business concept and some of its pieces and how it's going to work. And then we take a step back and decide like, okay, is this worth continuing or not? And often those 3-day prototypes are not, it's not about moving a single concept or business idea forward. We'll do a bunch of them, and then we'll look at the kind of the portfolio of prototypes and see patterns across the portfolio. It's like a big brainstorm almost.
Yeah.
And then for 5 weeks, we've kind of honed in on a more specific question. We think that there's something there, and we're going to invest more time to build it. But even in a 5-week or 6-week sprint, we're usually working in 1 or 2 week cycles. Mm-hmm. And so out in the world, like Google Ventures does 1-week design sprints that are partially inspired by the IDEO process and partially, you know, their own thing.
Googleified.
And so I think the principle, like, so there is no right answer to that question. The principle is to time box things.
Yes.
And make sure that you're asking an achievable question and then just cycling through them. Right.
Yeah.
So we talked about this prioritized list of questions. We call it on the collab, we talk about question queues, and we work on those not just on our own, but with a group to help us prioritize them. And then we try to cycle through as many as we can.
Yeah, nice. So yeah, time boxing and time constraints are your friend. And so it is great to even artificially limit them. Even if you could have budget to work for a year, which is not usually the case, but how do you think of chunks of time? A day, a week, a couple of weeks?
Right.
That's great. I'll throw in a few more just so we can get to them. I see there's a lot of excitement around one from Mario in Costa Rica. What are examples of failed projects where you did not find a value proposition or something unique? And then what do you do?
Yeah, so we had a pretty, one of the things that came out of our first summer looking at blockchain was this idea that you could fractionalize equity. So I know this is kind of out
there. We're putting some resources on blockchain. We could do a whole session on just trying to explain blockchain.
But this is a good one because it was an idea. So the idea was real estate. Most people put 90% or more of their net worth into one single asset, which is their home.
Yeah.
And if you think about like portfolio theory, that's actually not smart, right, to do from a balanced kind of investment perspective. And a lot of people don't even have access to that asset in the first place. And so one of the things we thought that the block, and still think that the blockchain can enable, is instead of buying 100% of a house, could you buy little pieces of a house and participate in real estate in a totally different way? And so long story short, it was one of those ideas that feels inevitable. I still think it's going to happen, and many of the folks on our team do. So we started to build prototypes, and we got a lot of good response from the consumers. But then we started to try to like build a company around it, and there was regulatory risk all over the place. There was financial risk. And one of the things we learned was, man, like to build the actual, like once we got past some of the small prototypes and it was time to build the big prototype, the working kind of MVP, we realized like, oh, we have to buy a house to do that and we have to break it up into pieces. And that's really, really expensive and hard to prototype when we haven't validated everything we need to validate. So that was one of the big takeaways, was like, could we have figured out something smaller to fractionalize? Like even a car, for example, you know, that's an order of magnitude less expensive. And could we have tested some of the same assumptions we have about real estate in that context? And it, and by the way, it has less regulatory issues as well.
Yeah. Wow. That's a big one. And so with that, did you, you're in a process of still assessing. I mean, we can pivot from that. We can wait. I think I've seen it across IDEO many times where we've, it's just not the right time in the market. The market's not quite ready for something, and that happens quite often with new technologies. Or is it actually not that desirable and maybe we need to go on to something else?
For that particular one, we decided to put it on the shelf for now. I think that somebody's going to do it someday. It probably won't be us, but we decided that it, you know, our effort was best spent elsewhere. In that case, we didn't pivot to try to find the other thing.
Yeah.
That said, you know, some of the themes from that specific concept and business area are still living on in the collab and we're applying them in different ways.
Cool. Okay. We just have a few minutes left. And so the last thing I want to ask you, it's something we get asked all the time, and I can see it in the chat as well. What are some of your favorite tools that you and the collab team and the networking collab are using to create prototypes? And I mean this both in like higher tech ways, but also super low tech. Like if people out there want to build their prototyping muscles, what are some of the things you suggest they look at?
Yeah. So we talked about, I think the business model canvas is actually a really good place to start, and many people are familiar with it. The way that I use it, and I think that folks here use it, is it's a good catalyst for surfacing questions. And it's a good catalyst for getting people on the same page. By that, I mean, it gives you all these boxes to fill, and you can make sure that we're all talking about the same things and we have the same assumptions. So it's really good for that. Where it starts to fall apart is when you start to change those assumptions, then you have to like make 10 different sheets, which gets complicated. But that's one good tool to start with. The other thing that we do from a business model prototyping perspective is there's something called discovery-driven planning. So this was a project, or these were professors from Columbia University, probably 10 plus years ago now, where they basically have an approach to financial modeling called discovery-driven planning, where they create reverse income statements. So they think about what's your profit goal, what are the allowable costs, and then what has to be true from the revenue side. And instead of trying to forecast like the generic hockey stick growth thing, it's like what conditions, under what conditions will this business work?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like sensitivity analysis and scenario planning. But that helps you surface those key assumptions quickly. And then you can build a plan for how you're going to learn those things. So that's at the, those are kind of the, like the two like iconic tools that we use in business design. Yeah. Then from an actual prototyping perspective, we use a ton of different things, and we should probably post a whole list the collab folks collected for us. But there's tools for building clickable prototypes. There's like 10 different platforms for that. There's now, as you get into new technologies, there's different tools for emulating chatbots. There's like... Anything that has a digital component to it, it could be really, really easy to build a first version of it.
Yeah.
Things like Squarespace, even like mm-hmm. instead of, even though we have like kick-ass software developers on our team, like it's not worth their time
to build it from scratch.
Like if we're just trying to get like a nice enough looking site with some text and imagery, like let's use Squarespace instead of building it ourselves. And I think that's a good principle, which is like, how can you use what already exists? We use Twitter, we've talked about using Facebook and Google Ads. So
nothing has to be made from scratch these days.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so how do you think really hard about like who am I targeting? Where do they live today? Whether that's physically or digitally.
Yeah.
And how can I use what exists to try to put something in front of them and see what they do with it?
Yeah. Well, I think that is a beautiful note to end on.
Yeah.
I know there's so much richness in this conversation. We'll send out all sorts of links and resources just as soon as we can. But thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thanks
to everyone with all your rich questions. And we'll see you again very soon. Bye.
Bye.